On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So tell me a little bit more about that zone that you get into as an actor. You can't get into it at will, can you?
No, I think you can make yourself calm at will, and then you can give a good performance. But when you get to that place and you have people that are working with you and they throw you the line, you throw them the line, they give you that hug or they give you that touch, and then it just sparks something, and then you just end up getting there, you know? And it's sort of like, I would say it's like great sex. It's just like, whoa, if you've ever had it, you know what it is. And it's like, oh God, just amazing.
Cheryl Lee Ralph is an amazing veteran actor who won a Tony for the original Broadway production of Dreamgirls, but is best known to a lot of people as Brandy's tough stepmom on Moesha. She's now directed a powerful short film for BET Her about women's health and internet fame called Like, Comment, Subscribe. She's a pretty amazing, fascinating, interesting person. For half of this interview, you can get it for free. For the full interview, go to patreon.com/Touré Show. For now, let's get into the amazing, the awesome, the powerful Cheryl Lee Ralph on Touré Show. So you have made a really powerful short film for BET about a woman with breast cancer who's being really thoughtful about it and really loving with her fans on social media. It's called Like, Comment, Subscribe. And you're directing this. You don't appear in it. You're just directing it. I want to hear you talk about just what you were thinking about as a director in overseeing this piece, because it's a very loving, heartfelt, emotional piece.
First of all, I thank you so, so much for that, because I really wanted to touch young women, especially young women of color, okay, Black, to let them know how very important they are and that they cannot downplay what they mean to the world in a big or small existence. You're very important. How that script became so real for me was a month before, when I first got the script, my brother married his partner and she had been diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. She's a social media influencer and she was, you know, doing her thing, staying positive, sharing it with people.
So this is your sister-in-law in many ways that we're seeing.
Yeah. The week before I started to shoot the film, she died of stage 4 metastatic breast cancer.
Oh no, I'm so sorry.
Oh, trust me. So were we. And it was surreal that I'm reading the script and life was imitating art. So all I had to do in my mind was just play what I knew was a woman's reality. I'd experienced it through talking to my brother and photographs that they shared. And I was just, this is it. This is important. Because if it could happen to a young woman like her, it could happen to anybody.
Who
so
was,
take yourself take yourself, your existence, your life, your love, your importance in the world seriously.
Who was and this woman? Tell us a little bit. Who was this woman? Tell us a little bit about her.
Tamika. Tamika was young. You know, Tamika was probably about getting ready to be 40 years old. Maybe she had four young children, and she was beautiful. You know, that kind of spirit. She was a beautiful woman, beautiful in herself, beautiful in life, you know, working on herself, becoming, you know, her best self. And she had, you know how sometimes regular everyday people battle with healthcare, access to healthcare or not. And you work certain jobs, they don't offer it. Or you work certain jobs and then they give you a lesser sort of healthcare. When something like cancer hits, you need an out and out army of care to be there for you. That care, that absolute great care, did not happen for her till she married my brother. You know, maybe if they had known more, they might have done it sooner, you know, and I don't know. So she had all of those things. Very often we're in life patterns in life of not taking care of ourselves. You know, when you have children, women will always put their children first. They will always do that. So she might not be feeling well, mother, woman, Tamika, but you're going to check on your kids first. Do your kids have what they need? And sometimes you put these things off, you put them off, you put them off until we present Black women to the emergency room, to the hospital, and what might have been a battle you could fight, you can't fight that battle anymore.
This short film, about 20 minutes, there's really only three actors in it, right?
That's right.
The woman, her fiance, and who
doctor.
And the doctor.
Which for me, I was very happy with, because Teray, you can do these films. You don't have a lot of money, and you certainly don't have a lot of time.
How long did you have?
2 days.
Wow, that's quick. That's quick.
2 days.
How many setups were there?
To end.
How many setups were there?
Oh, honey, please don't. I can't even remember. There were so many. Okay. And I can tell you this. We had to cut four of them because I was just like in reading it. I said, I'm not going to make my days. You know, when you look at your sheet and you talk to your DP and your crew and all, you can know what it is, how many pages you believe you can shoot within a certain amount of time. And I knew that we just were not going to make all of that. So there are two actors that did not make it into the final script because it just couldn't happen. It just couldn't happen. The scene underneath the stars, oh, that was just not going to happen because by the time we really wrapped, it was dawn. So, you know, it was a lot, but we were able to pare it down to what it is you see, and it just worked. And not having a lot of time, I figured that, you know, with women, there are a lot of feelings inside. There are a lot of feelings that you won't show. So I wanted to use the camera to, in some ways, get inside her mind. You know, there's one part where the doctor's telling her the bad news. And I didn't want to just sit on her. I wanted to feel her emotions, which she didn't want to let out. So you could see her eyes, and it was like a flood of tears. She wouldn't show that, really. It might be just a tear if it was real, but inside it's a flood of tears. You saw that. Then inside, outside, she's quiet, but inside she's screaming. And we were able to show it like that. And it came out better than I expected. And I was very, very happy.
Let's talk about what it means to be a director.
Ooh, I love that. You know what? A director has to live and breathe for the script. The director has to love the message, the everything. The director is the one who sees every move. You must know and see where the scenes are, where the characters are going. But I'm an actor's director, so I may see it, but I don't want to tell you what to do, because very often you get some skilled actors. They know exactly where the character is going. They know exactly how to move it to get the feeling that it is you want. So I was very happy that I had young actors, and these young actors wanted everything that I had in my mind for the film, and we were able to get it together. So a director has to see every move, a director has to work with everybody, and a director has to make everybody feel good about what it is they're doing and where they are. I mean, it's like you've got to make the crew feel good so that every move happens on time and as quick as possible. A director has to make the cast feel good so that the cast knows that they're being taken care of and it's going to be all right and I get it and we're working on this together. A director has to make the producers feel good. Don't worry, I got you and I will deliver this final project to you and it's going to be wonderful. A director is literally directing it all. And you have to, and it takes a certain amount of skill to do all of those things. A director even has to make the extras feel good about being there.
I've been on a couple of sets and I'm always impressed with how the director really needs to be sort of left brain and right brain at the same time. And you talk to the actors in a sort of poetic way, and then you're talking to the DP or the lighting people in a very technical way about lenses. And then maybe the producer sitting there and you got to talk about money and time, which is like a different part of the brain. And you got to be able to flow within, you know, a 2 minute period from the left to the right, to this, to that. And it's a very complex job involving like all of your soul.
It is. And that's why I believe a director must absolutely love the script. Because if you don't absolutely love the script, there's no reason for you to spend that much of your being on a project, whether it's a month, a year, or 2 days. You've got to love it to stay involved. And it was so interesting for me. When I'm on stage and I'm acting or I'm singing, there are moments where you get in a zone and you fly. It's like you just start to elevate. It's like the sky opens up and you're just in that place and you're like, yeah, 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 that's me. That's right. That's how we do this. Uh-huh. And when I got on set, and I said that first action, it was like I got right to that place. And I was like, oh my God, I am right where I should be. And I am loving this. And it was just one of the best feelings ever. And I felt so good because it was almost like Tamika was saying, that's right, Cheryl. Tell my story. Tell those people my story. Let me live again. And I was like, wow.
I mean, of course, we know you primarily as an actor. You've been acting for, you know, a super long time.
I've been acting since I was 19 years old and probably way before then. But I joined Screen Actors Guild at 19. So I've been a union working actor my whole life.
So tell me a little bit more about that zone that you're talking about that you get into as an actor. You can't get into it at will, can you?
No, I think you can make yourself calm at will, and then you can give a good performance. But when you get to that place, and you have people that are working with you and they throw you the line, you throw them the line, they give you that hug or they give you that touch, and then it just sparks something and then you just end up getting there, you know? And it's sort of like, I would say it's like great sex. It's just like, whoa, if you've ever had it, you know what it is. And it's like, oh God, just amazing.
What does it mean? What does it take to be a great actor?
I never downplay things like being curious. I never downplay being well-informed, well-educated, traveled, but really, really inquisitive about people, about life, about situations. Whenever I'm in any kind of situation, I'm always paying attention to everything around me. I pay attention to people. I pay attention to what they wear, how they walk, how they're talking, what it is they're saying. And it's like and that's helped me a lot because I can pick up and create a lot of human beings because I'm always inquisitive. You know, it's like I listen to people's accents, the way they speak, you know. I want to do an African. I want to do an African sister because, you know, I'm not an African, but I think the African, the accent, you know, especially from the West Africa, I think that is somebody that I could do. And, you know, I think about stuff like that. Then I think, why is it so many, you know, so many Brits, they come over to America and they work. And I think it's because, you know, they're quite skilled, they're quite educated, you know, and all, but they study well. And I always say to myself, you know, I'm going to practice their accent because possibility might come for me one day to go over there and work just as well. You know, if they can work here, possibly, you know, we can reciprocate and I can work there. So, you know, but also, you know, different accents, you know, they take on different people. And then, you know, sometimes you got them kind of folks. They's just like, you know, shit, I don't know what the hell y'all talking about, but y'all ain't from here. Y'all don't know what we talking about. So what you really talking about? Because I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're saying, huh? So, you know, it's like so many different things, you know?
I've had a bunch of actors on here talking about how you have to be a student of life and how they like to take that time. They might just go to a diner or whatever and just watch people. And just like you're saying, like pick up the details of movement, of expression, of just like how to be a person in the world.
The human being, human in life. It's different for everybody. It's different for everybody. You ever notice how sometimes somebody might be young, but then they'll take on a character that's ill? And it's because everything about their young life has to disappear to go to the person that's ill, you know. The person that's ill might smile, but they might not smile as often because they probably are in pain. And it's like, you have to realize that, you know, little things, you know, sometimes actors do that upset me though, when they don't think things through. It's like, don't put a cup of water or tea or coffee up to your mouth, put it down and your lips are dry. Did you not think that through? I'm going to see your dry lips. And then immediately I'm like, oh my God, at least put a little water in there or something. Little things like that get me.
Sometimes you need stories that reflect the community, the culture, the world that you love. You can get some of that on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, where you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and how to create world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is an account of what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective and diving into the things that we care about and the stories we want to hear that center Black perspectives. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes that celebrate the Black experience. Turn on NPR and listen to Black Stories, Black Truths, because Black stories make up what it means to be in America, and stories should never be told without us. Listen to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. Great Expectations is a new novel from the New Yorker staff writer Vincent Cunningham, a keenly observed novel about a young Black man searching for his place in the world amidst a moment of historic change. Great Expectations is about the main character David's 18 months working for Senator Obama's 2008 presidential campaign. Along the way, David meets all sorts of people who raise questions about history, art, race, religion, and fatherhood that force David to look at his life in a new way and come to terms with his identity as a young Black man in America. Colm McCann says Great Expectations will be one of the most talked about novels of the year. And others have called this book epic, intimate, and brimming with brilliance. It got a starred review in Publishers Weekly, which is a big deal. And it's a coming-of-age story that takes you inside the Obama campaign like nothing else. Great Expectations is an extraordinary book, available wherever books are sold.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First. Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
How do you have longevity in this business?
Do you know people ask me that all the time? And all the time I have to say, I don't know. But there are at least two other women that I know very well who have longevity. Loretta Devine and I were together on stage doing Dreamgirls, the original musical. My friend to this day. And Loretta has had longevity, right? She has a new movie coming out called Spell. Oh my God, it's so good. And she's great in it. Jennifer Lewis. Jennifer Lewis and I have known each other since we were 19 years old, talking about we were going to be stars and we were going to make it. At the Howard Johnson, there used to be a Howard Johnson on Broadway.
Yep.
And we sat in the window and we shared an apple pie because we didn't want to spend our money. And we both had water because we didn't want to spend our money. Talking about how we're going to make it. And she has had longevity. And now Black-ish is going to be turning into Old-ish. And since she is my old friend, I guess that'd be true. But, you know, it's, we have just carried on. We have just remained relevant. We have just continued to work and literally scratch out a place for ourselves in an industry that when we were much younger was not afraid to tell us that they didn't know what to do with us. I'll never forget a casting director looking at my 23-year-old face telling me, what do I do with a beautiful young Black girl? Do I put you in a movie with Tom Cruise? Do you kiss? Who goes to see that movie? He said that to my face. I will not forget the producer who, when I braided my hair, looked at my hair and said, can't you find a hairstyle more natural? Right. And when I was young and so eager, the industry wanted to tell me in so many ways, there's no place for you. I'll never forget the agent who looked at me after Dreamgirls and said, you're beautiful. You're talented. Remember your place. Don't be like that Diana Ross. When he said that, I said, whatever place Diana Ross is in, that's the place I want to be. I'll never forget these things. Never forget it. But like I always say to other young artists, you got to hang on in there if this is what you want to do. Because if you can't hang in there, do something else. Because this industry is full of people who have lost their minds because they couldn't try anymore or they tried too much and they were disappointed. Fame and this industry, it is not for everybody. It will kick your behind and then stomp on you just because.
Fame is difficult for an actor. And I would think that fame becomes part of your currency that allows you to have some power. Because when you walk in the room as a famous actor, you know, they already know who you are. They are there, you know, you have currency, you have value. The audience will say, oh, it's Cheryl Lee Ralph. Oh, yes, yes. As opposed to somebody they don't know yet.
Well, you know, it is what it is. It all depends on how it's used. And I think when I say fame as social currency in the industry, absolutely works, but sometimes people use their fame as a weapon. You know, there are a lot of people who think that they are more famous than they really are. And then they come to places and situations with bad attitude or big demands. And, you know, it's just not good because, trust me, as famous as you may be, somebody somewhere has no idea who you are.
Yes, of course. So right. you were talking about some of the challenges that you face as a younger actor and people saying, you know, basically, you're never going to go anywhere. What am I going to do with you? Well, now we've seen, you know, 100 different uses for Cheryl Lee Ralph, and she fits in all these plays and these movies and these television shows, and she can do anything. But you hear often that life gets harder for actors and especially actresses as you move on in time. How has that been?
If you mean getting older in an industry that loves youth, you know, I'm fortunate. I'm getting older. There are a lot of people who will never get older, ever. Right. I don't want that alternative. I'm very happy getting older. I'm very happy having been married, divorced, and remarried, happily watching my children grow older. I'm happy with that. It's a good thing for me, you know, but I'm just pleased that the industry keeps hiring me. You know, there are a lot of, you know, and I say this to people a lot. See, all those children who used to watch Moesha when they were little and they hated Dee when they're young, they adore me now that they're older. And a lot of them have their own production companies. And I'm like, yes, hire your mother. Hire your mother. So, you know, all we can do is carry on. Just carry on. That is all I can do.
Who are some of the actors who you really love and sort of like look at their performances and their ability and be like, wow, like that person is really transcended?
First of all, there's so many. I mean, I love to watch Viola Davis work.
Mm.
I love to watch Cicely Tyson work. I love Sterling. I love Denzel. I love, who else do I love? There are just so many, you know, they're just doing such great work or have done such great work, you know?
You played Denzel's wife in The Mighty Quinn. What was it like working with him and doing a scene with him? I mean, like, everybody says he's one of the greats. So when you're in the thing with him, what is that like?
I always have the same answer. I always tell people, especially women, I say, it was better than you think. Yes. We had a lovely time. We just got along well. You know, I actually wrote about what it was like working with Denzel and, you know, knowing the family, you know, at that time in my life. And he and I had a very like brother-sister sort of relationship. He doesn't have a sister and I have three brothers. So it was always like, oh, we could argue at the drop of a hat and I was determined to win and he was going to make sure I didn't. And it was just, we got along well. And then doing the movie together, it was like, great. You know, we used to have Pauletta, Denzel and myself used to have a small nonprofit where we gave toys out to the children in the most challenged gang-ridden neighborhoods in Los Angeles. And we would go there ourselves, just in cars, to deliver these toys to kids. And it was amazing. A few years ago, a young security guard, he said, "Miss Ralph, you remember delivering toys in the hood?" And I was like, "Yes, I remember toys in the hood." And he said, "I got a toy and I got a job now." And I was like, wow, wow. You never know how you're going to affect people, you know? You just never know. So we made a great movie together and we helped people in their lives.
We live in a world where you can get anything you need delivered to your door thanks to DoorDash. If you don't want to do the dishes or you feel a little sick, let DoorDash bring dinner tonight. My family uses DoorDash all the time because it connects us to our favorite restaurants without us having to drive. Last night, we got some Indian food for my wife, some gumbo for me, and sushi for the kids. And everyone was happy, and we didn't have to do the dishes. The process of ordering was quick and easy, and I love DoorDash for real. So I was so happy to do this for them because I'm a customer, because I know DoorDash is your door to more. Must be over 21 to order alcohol. Alcohol available only in select markets. DoorDash, your door to more. Download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything delivered. In my mind, the greatest author of the 20th century is Toni Morrison. And her greatest novel is Song of Solomon, a mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that is gorgeously written and has captivated readers around the world. The protagonist, Milkman Dead, was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt to fly. For the rest of his life, Milkman is trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and find the place of his family's origin, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and liars and assassins and the inhabitants of an amazing, beautiful, fully realized black world. The New Yorker said Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personalities. Toni Morrison is a genius. She's one of the greatest writers of her time, of the century, and Song of Solomon is her greatest book, in my opinion. It's a must-read that will ignite your imagination and show you what the best possible fiction writing is like. And it's a timeless tale that will stay with you after you've turned its final page. When you get to the climax, you will feel it in your heart. Available now at tonimorrison.com or wherever books are sold.
Together. And, you know, they're just amazing people, you know, Pauletta and what she's doing, you know, working with John David. John David was the ring bearer in my first wedding. He refused to go down the aisle. I should have listened to him. But anyway, it was all it's just been, you know, great symbiotic relationships in life. But he's a great actor and it was great working with him.
You've worked with a lot of the towering greats. You worked with De Niro, who many people say is one of the very best in the business. What's it like working with him, and what makes him such a great actor when you're in a scene with him?
He and I, it's interesting because you never know who it is you're going to have chemistry with, right? Amazing to have chemistry with Denzel. Amazing to have chemistry with Robert De Niro. Amazing to have chemistry with Whoopi Goldberg. You never know about chemistry because you can't fake chemistry. Either you and your acting partner have it or you don't have it and you just go through the motions. But with Robert De Niro, we were doing a film together called Mistress, and I was playing his mistress. And it was interesting. We had one scene, and I always loved this scene because this film was shot in, I think it was 1999 or something like that. No. Yeah. 1990, whatever. And there was a certain man who's occupying the White House who had a reputation of manhandling women and being unkind. And there's a scene where Robert De Niro grabbed me and I turned around and I said, "Don't play Donald Trump with me." And I always play that back in my mind. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And from there on, it was just like, bam, we just got to that space. He and I had a moment in a car. The scene was set up. We're sitting next to each other. We're going to take off. And we're waiting for them to do their whole setup and everything. And he turns to me and he said, "You're good. Like you're like really good. You're like award-winning good. It's like, but you know, this industry is not looking for the black girl." And he took a breath and I was wondering to myself, okay, where's he going to go with this? And he says, "So you have got to climb that mountain, wave the red flag and let them know that you're there because you are that good." And I was like, wow, thank you, Robert De Niro. Thank you for that. So I think I've been waving that red flag for quite some time. In fact, I write about that too in my book. So that was quite a moment, and it was great working with him. Great.
Another
garlic though. He does like garlic.
Another giant you worked with, Eddie Murphy in The Distinguished Gentleman. What's it like working with him?
We actually had a good time. My dad, Dr. Stanley Ralph, was his principal, his principal at Roosevelt High. And my father always said, "There's only one student I wanted to kill, and that was Eddie Murphy. But he's a talented young man."
Wow.
He was just great to work with. I remember when we were doing that, he was heartbroken. It's his business. He's alive. He can tell his own stories. But something happened when we were shooting Distinguished Gentleman. And when he got the news, he was like, "Are you kidding me? Really?" And he was a little bit heartbroken at that time, but he got over it.
Okay. I don't understand the story.
Oh, that's all right. He just got his heart broken. We were shooting a movie and he got his heart broken. She chose somebody else and it wasn't him and he couldn't understand it. And I felt bad for him.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Who can you talk about some of the things that you have learned from being around these giants, some of the acting things that you have learned that you've taken into your craft?
There's a saying in Jamaica and the saying goes, "Olya Kana." And I guess it would be like if you're in a boxing ring, hold your corner. And when I'm in my corner, I'm afloat like a butterfly and sting like a bee. I come ready.
Thanks so much to Cheryl for a great interview. And thanks to you for listening. And thanks to our super producers, Britt, Marcus Harkis, Noel, Sam Montes, Jason Reynolds, Gerville Calais, Michelle, Brenda Cox, Kathy F., and Kina Murphy. Toure Show is written by me, Toure, and produced by Jackie Garifano. Our editor is Ryan Woodhull. Our photographers are Chuck Marcus and Shanta Covington. Our booker is Claudia Jean. And we're distributed by DCP Entertainment. And we will be back on Friday and on Wednesday with more amazing guests because the man can't shut us down.